Hello, dear listeners. You're listening to We're Goblins with your weird hosts, Hannah and Tasha.
Weird.
I don't know, man.
The adjective changed. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Usually we're hostile, but today we're weird. I can accept that.
I like to keep things fresh. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that's it's hard for me to deal with change, but okay.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
So, We're Goblins is a show about buzzwords, pop culture, and the internet through the decades. You're listening to We're Goblins on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, broadcasting live from the traditional ancestral and unceded land of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. I am really excited about today's topic.
Yeah, me too. I feel a little flustered by it, but I think it's because I have a lot to say,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know if I can get through all of my thoughts. Therefore, we are going to do this in a part one, part two,
mm-hmm.
small series.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're talking about celebrity culture, extreme celebrity culture, stan culture, celebrity worship,
fandoms,
mm-hmm.
cult fandoms,
yeah,
cults,
the whole nine yards,
everything,
just everything. and yo, this is I live for this.
Me too, because I think I've been constitutionally anti fandom. Like, I just
excuse me, constitutionally,
yes. I just don't find myself becoming that obsessed with things,
mm-hmm.
and I don't mean this in a negative way if this is how you are, because I wish that I could feel what people feel when they become just completely obsessed with a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt that.
You're a hater.
I'm also a hater, and I have this show where we talk about words, and we're often grumpy about them,
mm-hmm.
when we explore that grumpiness. But being on the outside of fandoms in the era of fandoms is a strange feeling,
yeah.
I think.
So Tasha and I had a little sidebar before the show, and
a wee debrief.
And same, I don't resonate with fandom. I am fascinated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm keeping my eyes peeled. I'm watching. I'm reading. Watching the video essays. I don't get it, but I'm intrigued. So here we are trying to talk about standom, trying to dissect it,
mm-hmm.
offer our two cents. And something that we were discussing before the episode is that we don't think it's necessarily good or bad.
Yeah, I think
it just is.
As an important ethos and side note to this show, is that I think it's incredibly easy when you're talking about culture and media to have it fall in this dichotomy of like, this is a good thing and this is the dark side of the thing. And whether or not it is always successful on Word Goblins, I think our intention is to just kind of open up a topic, talk about it, tease out those like sociopolitical bits of a subject and discuss why and how it's happening, rather than to be like, this is a bad thing that is bad for society. Because, like, I do think that's just a boring argument.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, live to not be boring, I hope. I don't know, actually.
You're so interesting.
It's like, I take that back. But I think if we have an impetus to this, it's just to not fall into that category of declaring that something is bad for the world or doing bad things, unless it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Explicitly is.
Yeah, unless it's, like, derogatory, hateful, that kind of thing, then yeah, I would understand.
Be black and white about
yeah
that.
We have a hard line. But otherwise, I don't want to fall into the trap of saying like fandoms are essentially a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
for society. I think they're interesting, and I think tricky things can happen, and it can be a bad thing for some people in some circumstances, but like, I don't find that very interesting. I find what leads to a fandom happening and what a fandom can produce in the world, I find that stuff very interesting. I like the stories. I guess I'm a story person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think that's just an important thing to note. That's what we're attempting to do And hey, if we fall into the trap of saying a thing is bad, which we've done before, maybe call us and let us know, but also don't.
Yeah, sorry. We're not perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for prefacing with that. And that's our intention, really. Assigning judgment to something is easy, but inherently boring. As Tasha said, I don't get a lot of things, but they're fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I get things, but I'm just not interested. I'm like, yeah. I get where you're like this, but maybe time to change.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So without further ado, we are going to dive deep into stan culture, and wow, it is meaty. They have their own lingo. They have their own sub community on Twitter. So just very quickly, I wanted to play something as a little surprise for Tasha.
Okay. I'm like, I'm getting my like YouTuber react channel faces ready.
Yeah, y'all, if you can see it, Tasha has got her reaction face on. Mm-hmm. And that becoming one with the chair, that like
slouching back into slouching the chair.
That's the word.
If I needed glasses, I would kind of adjust them right now. I would be kind of like doing that Twitter thing, or not that Twitter thing, that Twitch thing where I'm kind of always looking at the chat, but I'm also trying to watch the content. I'm ready.
Okay, hit it.
But you still ain't calling. I left my cell, my pager, and my home phone at the bottom. I sent two letters back in autumn. You must not have got them. There probably was a problem at the post office or something. Sometimes I scribble addresses too sloppy when I jot them. But anyways, fuck it. What's been up, man? How's your daughter? My girlfriend's pregnant too. I'm about to be a father. If I have a daughter, guess what I'ma call her? I'ma name her Bonnie. I read about your Uncle Ronnie too. I'm sorry. I had a friend kill himself over some bitch who didn't want him. I know you probably hear this every day, but I'm your biggest fan. I even got the underground shit that you did with Scam. I got a room full of your posters and your pictures, man. I like the shit you did with Rockets too, that shit was fat. Anyways, I hope you get this, man. Hit me back, just a chat. Truly yours, your biggest fan, this is Stan.
All right.
I screamed. But it's like when it comes in with the like thunder sound effects, the little scribbly sound effects, you know it's like Eminem and not Dido. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. I'm very pleased with myself. So that was Eminem's song featuring Dido called Stan. And the first time this term was used, the term stan, was in Eminem's song and was, I suppose, apparently coined by Eminem in 2000s. The last sentence of the chorus goes like, your biggest fan, I am Stan. And the person in this video who actually plays Eminem's biggest fan almost to an extreme level, his name is Stan. And according to dictionary.com, one of our Bibles, stan is the behavior or beliefs of an extreme fandom whose members blindly support their chosen celebrity or team or group often demonizing anyone or anything opposed to it or not sufficiently devoted to the object of their worship. And so on the other end, there can be sort of like a god complex, mm-hmm. and things can get out of hand. You can see a lot of narcissistic personality behavior. Not a psychologist, but that is on display. And also something that I found interesting and I didn't know is that Stan initially was set to be the combination of stalker and fan, which is creepy. Initially there were dark connotations to this terminology in the early aughts, but then over the years it has become a more positive term for enthusiastic fans, or perhaps I feel like more and more we just speak so much in hyperbole, mm-hmm. that it's all like chill and cash. But yeah, that's a little intro to Stan-dom and Stan culture.
Yeah, and I mean, I think also from what I know, beyond being like Dido's number one fan, in this song, is based on a true story, I think. Mm. So this was someone who was obsessed with Eminem and who committed some kind of heinous act, but like, don't at me, I'm not sure exactly what had happened. This was not a positive song. No. It doesn't sound positive either, if we're just to go on the basis of vibes. But this, like you were saying, this term Stan has kind of had a bit of a evolution, mm-hmm. Into something that is used very casually. It's got a positive bent, whereas I think in this instance it had quite a negative and harmful. It was almost a term that evoked a sort of violence because of stalking. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see that change over the years.
Yeah, and how destructive parasocial relationships can be, and the extreme side of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know it was based on a true story, but just going by the song. And I just want to add for context, I played this song for Tasha because of Dido.
yeah, Thank You by Dido, best song of all time.
Yes. Period.
Period.
So in the song, the protagonist actually ends up taking his life and killing his pregnant girlfriend, which is, yikes, really dark.
Yeah, can't confirm or deny if that is real, but I also kind of suspect that it is, which is why this story is being told.
Yeah, and it almost feels like a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Of sorts. And yeah, it's really interesting how, again, the term has evolved and is more favorable now. Something I want to mention before the show, I went down the rabbit hole of Stan Twitter. Mm. And at the expense of coming out as a normie, I was like, what is that?
I will reveal myself as a normie. What is Stan Twitter?
Yeah, your millennial self is showing.
Yeah, bonk. Send me to millennial jail again.
So, you know what? It makes sense. This is sort of like after our time, in the sense, in the 2010s. Mm-hmm. Because that was, for a lot of folks in high school, middle school, that was when they were becoming obsessed with boy bands, mm-hmm. and were, you know, whatever, fangirling or being fanboys or groupies for One Direction and K-pop. And that was when it became popularized. The K-pop army, as they're called, or directioners, took over Twitter and made several pages and sort of like a niche sect of Twitter, which is called Stan Twitter, and they had their own lingo. So very similar to like gamer Twitter, gay Twitter, anime Twitter, weird Twitter.
So it speaks to like what a user would do on the platform, not so much like a singular page. Because I was reading that as like Stan Twitter is just like a Twitter account about Stan-dom.
No.
And
it's a community.
It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Very much so. And it's interesting. And I don't know if these terms were coined on Stan Twitter, but they were definitely mm-hmm. popularized on Stan Twitter. So words like, again, cancel culture, who even knows where it began, was huge. And that checks out, because if you're so over enthusiastic, or if you're so sort of over zealous in your worship, then that comes at the cost of like, okay, I don't know, this person is not good anymore or whatever. So like cancel culture was huge on Stan Twitter. Something which I found interesting was a lot of discourse around using trigger warnings and content warnings when talking about different things became popular. Keyboard smash, apparently. And I never knew. I do that myself, but I never knew that just typing in different alphabets when you're enthusiastic is called keyboard smash. Key smash.
Yeah, it's a classic way of expressing emotion on the internet.
Yeah. And IRL and Skinny Legend, which I did not know what that is. But apparently Skinny Legend is when you're in the fandom of a star who you feel is underrated. And it was coined specifically for Mariah Carey. And it has nothing to do with, and I know skinny, I'm like, what, why is it called skinny? But it has nothing to do with your body weight or your size or your shape. It's just like, oh, this person is a legend, but they're underrated. And so they're my skinny legend. And it's often used for women stars. Wild. But anyway, that's a little bit of an aside on Stan Twitter. And it's Slingo.
Huh. Is the Mariah Carey connection because of her Why Are You So Obsessed With Me song?
Ooh.
There was a time period, and I'm sorry about this aside, but it just triggered something in my like dumb music history brain. It was like pop music from 2008 to like the 2010s, that there was like a theme where celebrities would make little... They would write tracks about being famous and how hurtful fame was to them. And I know that there's like Stan is a good example, obviously. That Mariah Carey song, it might just be called Obsessed. I know like Paris Hilton wrote one about being famous and how harmful fame culture was. Britney Spears had a few. Like, it was just kind of a thing that we all collectively we're like, damn, it must be real hard for them. We just accepted this content.
Yeah.
But I think fandoms went mainstream after this. Like celebrities were, pop stars rather, were singing about this or writing songs about their star power before the 2010s, when I think fandoms went totally mainstream. And that's probably when like Stan Twitter erupted, and when Tumblr produced as many like Tumblr sexy men as they could possibly produce.
Yo, speaking of Tumblr, and this is actually very interesting, and I know that if we talk about Lana Del Rey, she was like the OG Tumblr musician / pop star. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if it's reaching too far to like connect her fame with the rise of Tumblr.
Oh, definitely
in
not.
The early 2010s.
Yeah, definitely not. I think she was pretty, like, she was maybe one of the first examples of like connecting that like persona and aesthetic to
with platform media.
Yeah, exactly. With platform media and like kind of gathering a community around those things. I always look at Tumblr as if it were like posters on your bedroom wall or in your locker or something like that. And that really builds this energy of like...
And that sad girl online aesthetic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I would say she's pretty important to that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I know there were a lot more that kind of had this earlier on. I want to say like Panic at the Disco in their MySpace.
Shout out.
Yeah. Well, not, I don't know. I don't want to give that to them.
Okay.
But they were, they put up their demos on MySpace back when MySpace was the music platform as well as social media. And I think because of their persona and the like visual aesthetic of them and the energy, that also kind of produced this like fan aura. And that is what got them signed. That is what got them into the mainstream, was because of that. And there's obviously this aspect of like DIY, which is really fantastic for these artists. And there is also an aspect of like they are where they are because they were able to produce such a strong fandom off of sort of like nuanced unknowns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something that I just want to note is that, of course, fan culture is nothing new. It has existed for decades and decades and decades. But what we're seeing again with social media and internet culture is that how it has really shape-shifted. And we did a whole episode on parasocial relationships, I think, earlier in the year, or was it last year? And it's really like how I see it is our proximity to our fave celebrity is so close now that the illusion of like, oh, I know this person and I'm going to fight for them, or mm-hmm. I'm going to go to battle for them is something that is unprecedented. And the whole multiverse, the whole every big celebrity, and especially pop stars, have their celebrities have their own labels. And it's interesting. You could look at it as like, oh, they have community, also like self-importance. But for Taylor Swift, for example, we have Swifties, we have Bleebers for Justin Bieber.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And there are others. I mean, this has existed back in the day as well. Like, for Deadheads were huge for Grateful mm-hmm. Dead.
Trekkies. I think, yeah, just to jump on your note about fandom being nothing new, we're talking about it like really hitting the mainstream and just like taking a solid run for it. Obviously, fandom started way earlier. I believe they started with zine culture in the 80s, more directly related to Star Trek. A lot of sci-fi zines were sort of like proliferating, where people could converge on similar ideas and fandoms in a slower paced environment. This has been going on for a while, but I mean, I believe it to be far more mainstream, and like the intensity has risen to like a fever pitch.
It was more niche.
Yeah, it used to be more niche. I think that is kind of like, it used to be sort of like a fringe community, and now they're widespread, global, like sometimes really aggressive communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. I think that's the difference, where I think of folks going to Comic-Con and that fandom, and those folks mm-hmm. are, again, seen as like giant nerds on the fringes. But now what we're seeing is like it's mainstream, it's everywhere, and it's seen something as cool
to be a stan.
I know Beyonce performed it was September, and every other person I saw on Instagram wore black and shimmery silver outfits for her latest album, I think Renaissance, and her fan base, they're called Beehives. And so kind of that level of obsession, I don't know, it's just something, it feels different. And then also now in the era of oversharing, you know so much more about your favorite celebrity, mm-hmm. and then you can really adopt that aesthetic, right? Like so many folks, I remember in the 2012s, looked like a Lana Del Rey. We're trying to embody that aesthetic. And yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I think it's, again, that parasocial component that you brought up earlier, where our proximity to these stars is just so close. It's like there's just plexiglass between you and them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mean, don't quote me on this, but I don't feel that there is such a presence of like publicists and people that are sort of the middleman in between you and who you're seeing, given they probably orchestrate their social media. But you mostly get celebrities input about your favorite celebrity from seemingly their mouths, where before you would have to get it through various forms of media. So it'd be really mediated. Sorry. It would be very mediated. Ooh. Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're in a time of like hard-hitting profiles or interviews either. I think a lot of like celebrity reporting is actually like quite soft because it's just meant to sort of like give a nice profile of someone. Like it's a little bit, it's closer. It's a little bit more tailored, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Remember TMZ?
Yeah.
That era is dead.
That era is very dead. Mm-hmm. I think people just don't want to see the bad things associated with the person that they are stanning. And we certainly just, maybe we're not used to it. Maybe we just don't get a full kaleidoscope view of anyone that lives in what I call Clown Town anymore. Clown Town being my like stand-in for when I talk about like celebrities and like Hollywood and the world of just like the uber wealthy. I like to just say they live in Clown Town because I have no idea what happens in there.
Tasha, I'm saying this on air for Press Try UT. You need to trademark this.
I do, yeah. I'm trademarking it right now.
Get in touch with Tasha if you know anything about trademarking.
Yeah, actually, yeah. So please get in touch with me because I don't know how to do things. But people that live in Clown Town are far closer appearing to us. It's like we can just look through the window at them, whereas before I think we had to really search and create our own narratives. That's why we had proliferation of fanfic and a lot of fan content that was just like gif mashing to make it seem like people were about to make out or whatnot, because you had to create your own canon, whereas perhaps now it's just given to you.
Yeah, you had to pretend back in the day. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to. You can literally slide into your celebrity's DMs. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
They're never going to respond, but you can do it.
That's true. It's the action is available to you.
Yeah. And something else that, like what we've been talking about, I think, and I like how their conversation has really been going on the evolution of fandom, really, and kind of the ebbs and flows of it. And it can be chill and finding community and just for, I don't know, laughs. But then it can get pretty aggro to the point of demonizing folks who don't agree with you. And sometimes even a celebrity you don't like, I suppose. So it can go either way. And that's not fandom. Maybe perhaps like the anti-fan, right? It's like, okay, you don't like this person. They're whatever. Like they're not great, but they're also like harmless. But you will like just perhaps they'll get a lot of hate online.
Yeah.
Right. And so I don't know how much people have so much time?
Maybe that's it. Maybe I've never had enough time. It's not that I'm a jerk. It's that I'm just so busy. I mean, I think youth is a big component here. When you're trying to figure out who you are and what you like and what you represent, it's really easy and perhaps like reasonable to find other people to kind of like project those things onto and hold it for yourself. I will say that I think, I believe that fandom is like essentially rooted in like the marginalized and people who have existed on the fringes. I think fandom is like essentially queer just because of its like origins. Mm-hmm. And it's about imagining and seeing yourself. Like shipping has primarily been about imagining queer relationships that would not exist on TV for yourself and owning that canon and creating content for it. And so I've always thought it served that purpose up until the mid-aughts when I think it hit more of a mainstream bent, and maybe it's become more about finding yourself in people just generally. Like, I think Obsession, I don't know, this is a lot of I thinks, but I think I think Obsession comes from like you're finding a lack in your life or yourself or what have it, and you found it in someone else's media or themselves, and you're filling that hole with the thing. And perhaps Taylor Swift is this thing for people where they're like really fixated on like girlhood,
mm-hmm.
and those kind of stories,
mm-hmm.
and they're filling some kind of void with those stories and that ethos. And I think it's just about finding parts of yourself, which is associated with youth, but it also is something that never stops happening. I just think it's less aggressive the older you get.
Yeah.
But
hmm.
fandoms are kind of ageless too. So maybe we're all just still trying to fill a void of some kind in other people, through other people. I don't know. Something has made it turn a little bit more.
That sounds like Peter Pan syndrome.
It does.
And also kind of sounds like why people would want to join a cult, trying to find meaning in mm-hmm. life. But no, I kid.
It's not a joke, because I think something we wanted to talk about, at least in the part two of this, is cults.
It's related.
And yeah, the relation of fandom to cult and sort of coercive language and communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was very interesting, where you talked about fandom initially being queer and existing on the fringes, and an imagination of something you didn't see as part of status quo, which like has totally shifted now,
mm-hmm.
And is very detached from its original conception. Because I think of, actually, when I was doing research on words and phrases used on Stan Twitter, surprise, surprise, a lot of them come from the ballroom culture.
What?
In New York.
Okay, that makes sense.
In the 80s, if we talk about spill the tea, drag, being canceled, talking about a wig. So, again, did not know what a wig was. But when you're very excited or surprised by someone's action, so say, I don't know, Dido comes back and releases a song,
girl,
and you're just like, my wig just flew off. And then that has connotations in, again, queer black folks dressing up, dolling up, being in drag. And so a lot of lingo is, again, AAVE. And that totally checks out and relates to like what you were talking mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, it's like derived from small communities. And I think people are really attracted to that feeling of being part of a small community with language that reflects things that only you in that community would get or know. It's,
yeah. You know, something that I think about is that there was this sort of secrecy in the initial, I mean, if particularly if I'm talking about the ballroom culture, obviously that was hella marginalized, they were persecuted, and it was very hush-hush, it was an underground scene, and so you couldn't really be a stan publicly. And so there was, and maybe I'm romanticizing this, but kind of that, like, there was this earnesty to it, which, like, doesn't exist anymore, because you can be a Swiftie anywhere and nobody's coming after you, because that's like very socially acceptable kind of fandom. Whereas even for like, for example, we did talk about furries at one point, is that those folks, again, have been bullied. And I watched this one video where a lot of folks who are attracted to the furry community are compelled by that community, or folks who are neurodivergent mm-hmm. and are on the autism spectrum. So again, talking about folks who are belonging to equity-seeking groups.
Yep.
And so that is just, I'm more empathetic to kind of that groups.
Me too.
And then versus sometimes I'm like, I don't know, y'all, stop being insufferable or like get a room.
Both at the same time.
But I'm just a hater, so don't listen to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we're fundamentally incapable of becoming obsessive because we hate everything. But, yeah, this sort of, like, the in-group language mixed with this sort of acceptance of obsession and stand-up, mixed with it, this positive spin that it has taken, I think a lot of that has created the situation that we're currently in. With mainstream cult fandom, but definitely something that I want to like just open up the hallway a little bit to is the names that all of the groups adopt. And I think that language is so important in this way because it directly speaks to that forming of a community. And as you sort of like rattled off a few, like Beliebers and
Beehive
and
Swifties,
yeah.
Wow.
Thank you. Oh my god. It makes me think about cults from the 80s and 90s. I don't mean this in a bad way. It makes me think about cults from the 80s and the 90s in that some of them had very specific language that they would use with one another that was meant to be like, if you know, you know. And it also made you feel accepted and part of the communities. Like, for example, Heaven's Gate. The infamous UFO cult, the late 80s, early 90s, they used to call their bodies vehicles, which is so indicative of what the end goal of the cult was. And I think it also produces this kind of detachment from your reality of like having a physical body. I think also in their sort of like unfortunate end mass suicide, they called it like the away team. They had this like very technical approach to talking about like very fundamentally physical and human things. And I think that language shaped the experience. And so calling yourself a Swiftie in a way shapes the experience of like what you're about to engage in. It's kind of like this offhand, really cute, kind of girly thing. And YouTubers do this a lot when they address their audience. They tend to give them sort of like blanket names for everyone that consumes this content. And when you offer up a community name, people are going to take it and they're going to act like they're part of a community. So if someone says, for example, I watch a lot of commentary YouTube.
Hello, my doves.
Yeah, exactly.
By Mina Lee.
Exactly. You now are internalizing that, like, okay, I am a dove. Like, you're not saying this to yourself, but that language sets the tone for now who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of other YouTuber examples, and I'm drawing a huge blank. But
okay. How about you think, and we take a quick break?
I will never think. Okay. Thank you.
Wow. Rebel.
Thank you. Old growth forests matter. Join us in supporting the Arasks Fairy Creek blockade. Indigenous communities have been on the front lines of the logging disasters in BC, and we are calling on all land defenders to help us save the last of Canada's old growth forests. You can donate online through the Climate Justice UBC Instagram page and through QR codes on flyers that have been posted throughout campus. For donations of sleeping bags, blankets, and clothing, there will be collection bins at Sprouts Cafe, located in the basement of the Life Building, and at the Center for Interactive Research on Sustainability, located at 2260 West Mall. Donation pickups will happen on October 30th, November 13th, and November 27th. For more information, go to Climate Justice UBC on Instagram.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people, so check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night, right at 9 p.m. after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
Of UBC. Join us. Join the SSN. A collaboration between the C4 Choral Composition Club and the Music Production Club. With us, you can find someone with whom to collaborate, someone with whom to make music. All skill levels welcome. ssn@gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
Discover Noreen Braun's album, Songs for Trees, dedicated to the forests and the spirits within the trees. As we fight climate change, trees are the lungs of the planet and we need to help them. Her jazz and blues are blended with rock and synthesized pop elements to create a textured and ambient soundtrack to nature. Songs for Trees is a narrative, with each song guiding us through a journey through the forest. A trip, literally and metaphorically, about the interconnectedness of all things. The Vancouver Sun names it one of five albums you need to hear. Find out more at noreenbraun.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into We're Goblins only on CADR 101.9 FM Vancouver with your two weird hosts, Hannah and Tasha.
Sorry, I keep forgetting that you've changed the adjective and I'm like, whoa. Sorry, I'm intolerant to change.
So I think we need a little label for our fans, if you have any, our imaginary fans.
Oh my God, we do. And we could pull a YouTuber and be like, hello to all of my blanks.
Yes, it's kind of embarrassing that I'm actually scheming this, and I'm not going to pretend that it just comes naturally or it's seamless. So I don't know. If you have any ideas, hit us up.
Yeah, okay. I will.
Wow. I don't know, Goblinners or yeah. Goblin Town, or
I think it works best when you create a little story like Goblin Town, like if you want to join Goblin Town.
Yeah.
Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Hit that share button.
Yeah, smash that like button.
And hey,
comment
it has
below.
To, yes. It has to give cult vibes only.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True.
So, last night I went to a documentary screening at the Cinematheque. The documentary I watched was called Anything for Fame, which is directed by Tyler Funk and is produced by the National Film Board and North of Now. The documentary explores the world of online influencers and how and why they do what they do, and the sort of cost of it or kind of motivations behind it. And all this to say that it was really insightful. It was a great documentary. It also got quite dark at some points, and the entire time I was mortified to the extreme lengths people will go for fame. And something that, and I was hooked. I was hooked. So it was almost like I thought it was very meta in that sense, where I'm watching a documentary about online influencers trying to get your attention, and I can't look away. So before I get into it, I thought it would make sense to just quickly play the trailer, and so you can listen to it and get a sense of what it's about.
Internet fame is a real thing. Internet fame is a powerful thing.
People that were famous were on the top of the world. Everybody loves you. You're rich. You're like the best person on the planet. You're like the chosen one.
Now anybody could become famous.
I started just pumping out content for fun. I didn't expect to gain a following at all.
We got to come up with new ideas that are crazier. That's the direction that I kind of took it.
Homeland Security and the FBI got involved, and the repercussions were pretty severe.
We live in a society where we're seen as objects. We just are. And it's like a lot of people don't want to admit it.
My son's an influencer, and I was like, I don't even know what that means. Are you getting a full-time job?
It's just absolutely insane.
They want something scandalous. They want a headline.
If I'm gonna go to jail, I'm gonna go to jail for these videos. I just gotta learn how to do it, and I'll be okay.
If it wasn't me up there doing it, I'm sure somebody else would be up there doing it.
I was willing to, you know, do anything for fame.
So, yeah, that was the trailer. Any reactions from Tasha?
Oh, my reaction channel. oh, wow. Oh, my God. Interesting. And also, it seems like I haven't seen it, but what I find really something that was like crafted in a lab for me, like I'm just so interested in this, is like the sort of the look at what this feels like for the people that are engaging with it. Maybe it's just like more less of like a like social analysis and more like personal. Like I'm a big fan of narratives and storytelling, and how my brain works is like I'm addicted to like reading people's stories. So learning what it is like on the other side of things, given some of the cameos in the trailer, seems really interesting to me.
I will say you hit the nail on the head.
Well, it was a good trailer.
Yeah. So, I really appreciated how the director tried to really get to know these influencers. There weren't just, I mean, hey, I'm all for social analysis, and there is. Mm-hmm. There is some guy with a PhD in media studies who studies internet culture and memes, and can I please have his job? And then there's a clinical psychologist, and yeah, that is important for context and to situate us in a certain topic, but it's also important to get to know the people we're talking about, and often sometimes we see with TV shows or such documentaries where people, experts, quote-unquote, get on their soapbox and go on and on about these people and study them, but we don't really hear the other side, and I don't think that's fair or very interesting. And something that this documentary does really well is it doesn't vilify these influencers. I mean, yeah, they do things which can be moronic. They indulge in reckless behavior. They are scandalous and obnoxious, but they are also human, and they have hopes and dreams and desires and fears and insecurities, and they're people. And so it was really cool to get to know these people as people who have nice aspects to them, or like moments of sort of to see those moments of humanity. Yeah,
I think what's interesting about that is that there's like, to me, it seemed like it was more of a profile on influencers on like one platform specifically. Like it looked very Instagram, TikTok based. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, and YouTube.
And YouTube, okay. And maybe like one type of content. But there are different influencers that proliferate in these different platforms. And it's kind of meta how we want to know more about the people that the whole basis of engaging with their content is to know about them. like following someone that you don't know on Instagram is to get this voyeuristic look into their lives. You want to know more about just a person because it feigns this like closeness, this familiarity that we all know is not real. But I think that the impetus there is to know a person, and having a documentary that's like, no, this is how you get to know them is just another way of knowing people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it also speaks to how like you can't ever truly know. And there are many sides, but that is something that's easy to forget when we're branding ourselves and we're so used to branding ourselves. Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. It goes beyond the smoke and mirrors, and it talks about, hey, like online fame, it's only just one side that we see, but it's intoxicating, of course. Yeah, you can easily go viral, but you can also very easily be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost it takes, how these people have tried for years to gain that fame, and only a select few really make it and are able to monetize that fame. And so, yeah, it does take a certain level of craft and quote-unquote talent, which people can be like, oh, like anybody can do it. But no, you really can't. And something that, hey, I personally respect, and maybe this is controversial, but I respect it, and something that the director noted, Tyler, after in the Q&A, is that he specifically wanted to look at folks who were very intentional about wanting to gain that fame and fortune and not looking at influencers who accidentally went viral. And so it was interesting, especially one of the influencers, this woman named Ava, who went viral after she licked a toilet seat on a plane. And she knows exactly what she's doing. She's really smart, and she's gamifying the system. She's like, hey, women are objected anyway, so I might as well make money off of it. And so that was just a very like interesting insight into kind of this world of like, these people were self-aware,
mm-hmm,
of like what they're doing. This other guy, Jake, who's pulling off these really reckless stunts and hijinks, if you will. He's like, yeah, that's my persona. I'm a dumbass, and I'm trying to make money off of it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There's a really distinct difference between putting a thing out into the world, and like the imperative behind that was like, I just wanted to make this, and then the really conscious like, I am making this for a purpose to get something back. Like, those are two different impulses to me. And I am really curious about people who are able to tap into that latter impulse, the like, I know exactly what I'm doing when I put this out into the world because I am trying to get something back, just because like I lack the ability to sell out. Like, I wish that I could so that I could be doing better. Like, I don't know how to do that. And it's smart. It's knowing what to show people and what not to show people.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to point out that I find really interesting about this is like, when we talk about fame, we're really talking about is attention. And I know the term attention economy has been like blah, blah, blah thrown out a million times. It's almost boring at this point. But our attention and what we choose to pay attention to is so valuable.
It's commodified.
Commodified. And it's so valuable that people notice, and they have figured out that if they are able to just like harness a small amount of that attention for a good amount of time, that they can profit off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, yeah, there's a tension between you as the like viewer, the user, trying to figure out how to place your attention properly, which none of us know how to do.
No.
And people who are trying to harness it and do a very good job at harnessing our attention. And like, why don't we spend more time talking about attention and where to place it and how to be conscious of your attention? Because mine is fractured.
I would give anyone $1 million if they can tell me how to be intentional with where I put my attention.
Yeah.
You know?
Valuable skill.
And I know, yeah, the term attention economy is thrown around a lot, blah, blah, blah. But really, yeah, companies, tech companies, influencers, they're all trying to get our attention. Our attention is scarce, and that's what's going to make them profit. And our attention spans are off a goldfish in this day and age. And something else that I quickly want to mention before we close this episode, because we are going over time, So I just wanted to read this quote by the director, which I think is very all-encompassing. So Tyler says, we all crave attention and relevance, but it's a fine line between seeking attention and crying for help. It's easy to judge to see content creators as extreme entertainers, to forget that they're real people. What drives them to do such extreme behavior and to post it online for the world to see? Why are they willing to risk so much for fame? And most interesting of all, what is internet fame and how can it change your life?
Yeah, we have seen it happen. And I find that really interesting because, yeah, it's the attention piece that we've all been taught. I think if you grew up with social medias, at a certain point, you just like absorb the idea, the ethos that attention is important and harnessing it will be beneficial to you. And all of us react differently to that. Some people's reaction is bigger and showier and are able to like glean from it. And others, their reaction to the attention economy as it is to hide from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Attention is just a very interesting piece of that conversation.
Absolutely. And I think about like attention really goes hand in hand and is directly proportional with relevance and mm-hmm. feeling important. And then the other side of it, the downfall of it, you're forgotten. You don't have anyone's attention, hence you're irrelevant. And it can be so dangerous, kind of that dichotomy. Mm-hmm. And that's often what we see play out. I mean, how many times have we seen the rise and fall of influencers? And it's like, where are they now? And yeah, like, I mean, needless to say, attention, people's attention is addictive and intoxicating, but then it definitely comes at a price, mm-hmm. of your mental health. And one of the influencers featured Germani, it was interesting to see that, hey, like, yes, his videos are going viral, and he also had a super fan who was featured in the documentary, but he was broke. He was not able to make any money off of it. And in some ways, his videos often were decoded as like a cry for help that this person isn't doing well.
Interesting. Yeah, I will say final thoughts. I feel like influencer culture and harnessing attention that way is the weird like golem that has been crafted out of social media platforms and what they've taught us and how like we've like gleaned ways of living our lives through what these platforms are like showing us what is valuable, what is worthy, and we kind of internalize those things. And so, of course, it is created an instance where people are seeking it out intentionally. And that's crazy.
Yeah. awesome. Okay, so you can stream Anything for Fame on nfb.ca and have a good rest of your day, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.